You'd like to turn your Bibles to Mark chapter 6, please, on page 841 in the Black Church Bibles that you'll find near you. In a few moments, I'm going to read Mark 6, verse 30 to 44. Well, those of us that were here on Wednesday at the prayer meeting, we were praying for those in authority over us. And in our tables, we mentioned people that are in authority over us in a very immediate sense. We mentioned each other's bosses, maybe people in our, courses or whatever it might have been. People that are in authority in a very immediate sense, they're the ones that give the orders. We have to do what they say. But we also prayed for our leaders in government. We prayed for others that are in authority in a kind of more distant way. But I don't know about you, but as I look around in our society today, it feels like there's a need for leaders that is not being filled. I don't know if you think that, maybe you think, no, we're fine. But I think looking around in the papers, looking around in the news, I think most people, whatever section of our society they're examining, think that's a problem and there's no leaders that are stepping up to do anything about it. You might look at the NHS, 75 years. And you just need someone to just get in there, look at the problems, diagnose everything and say, right, this is the way forward. Is there anybody like that? You might look at the education sector. We think about strikes that are going on. People crying out for somebody, a leader who has some sense of what this job is actually like and what the demands of it actually are. And actually diagnose everything correctly. What's real injustice? What's kind of just maybe not actually injustice? And just bring it all together and say, this is what we do. And you can apply that kind of need to all sorts of different sections of our society. You can look at the immigration crisis. You can look at the population crisis, climate change, whatever it might be. It just feels like everywhere we look in society, people are saying, we have leaders, but we don't have leaders. Look at our current leaders, maybe, and you think, if not them, then who? Then what? Political analysts think that's quite a scary question. If there's a big gap, it tends to be historically that someone will step into that, and they're not always great. In our story last week, we had a picture of a human leader, didn't we, in King Herod, the king of the time. Not a real king, but had the title. Throwing a banquet. We saw embodied in him this picture of human wickedness, human weakness on the throne. Not great. This week we see a very, very different kind of king throwing a very, very different kind of banquet. Mark's story picks up after 6 verse 13 when he sends out the disciples. You remember 2 weeks ago he sent out the disciples on that mission. Then you have the story of Herod's banquet. And then it picks up the story again with the disciples returning in verse 30. And that's where I'm going to read from. The apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while. For many were coming and going and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a desolate place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. And when it grew late, the disciples came to him and said, this is a desolate place, and the hour is now late. Send them away to go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. But he answered them, you give them something to eat. And they said to him, shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat? And he said to them, how many loaves do you have? Go and see. And when they had found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then he commanded them all to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups by hundreds and by fifties. And taking the 5 loaves and 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing, and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples to set before the people. And he divided the 2 fish among them all. And they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish. And those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. Let's pray, shall we? Let's ask for God's help as we look at this passage. Father, whatever I have as a person, I give to you, and I ask that you would use for your kingdom purposes. And whatever energy we all have as we sit and listen, whatever attention capacity we have, we give it to you. We ask that you would use it to grow us in our knowledge of you, our love for the Lord Jesus, our willingness to serve him. Amen. So, the disciples come back to Jesus in verse 30, and that's how the narrative begins. We don't know how long they were away for, it's not recorded, but we do know that back in those days, there's no public transport, there's no cars, there's no lime scooters you can jump on and whiz around. So they're coming back tired. They're coming back having walked a lot with achy limbs and blisters on their feet and dust in every crevice. And they just want a rest. They've done what Jesus has instructed. They've gone around to all the villages that he told them to go, all the region, go to every village and preach the message of repentance, the message of the kingdom. Some villages took them in, listened to them. I think probably most didn't. I think some, they wouldn't even have been allowed in. But it's been a long, old thing for them to do. They've never done anything like this before. And they get back and they tell Jesus what's happened, what they've done, what they've said. And now they need a break. Verse 30, it says, apostles. The word apostle means sent one. So in verse 30, we are told that the sent one has returned to Jesus and told him all they had done and taught. And he said to them, come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. So the disciples come back, having done a busy, busy thing, and they come back to a busy place. What they really want right now is some quiet, but actually Jesus' HQ in Capernaum hasn't been any quieter while they've been away. Jesus hasn't paused his office hours in the absence of the disciples. They're exhausted and they want to come back, but actually it's anything but a peaceful retreat center. There's a crazy business that keeps on going. And it's the same kind of craziness that we had in chapter 3, verse 20, where they can't even eat. And at that time, Jesus' family, look at this. Look how busy it all is. Look at how on the point of exhaustion Jesus must be. And think he's out of his mind to be allowing all of this, to be letting this continue. So the disciples come back and they need a break. Okay, everyone needs a break. Jesus' group, the whole group, they need a rest. Come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest. Oh man, Jesus, we'd love that. That is exactly what we need right now. Just be on your own, by yourself as well. Just us. Just people we don't have to pretend with or perform with or get. You can just be yourself. Oh, that'd be amazing. Quiet, rest. That sounds really good, Jesus. And so verse 32, they get into the boat and head towards a desolate place by themselves. Notice even in those first two verses that Mark repeats that. Desolate place by yourselves, desolate place by yourselves. That's what they want, that's what they need, that's what they're aiming for. But it doesn't work out. Verse 32, now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. Instead of it being an escape from the crowds, it's actually functioned as a gathering of all the crowds, all the towns. It's almost like they were trying to, you know, people had to travel into the towns and it was crazy, but it was maybe just about manageable. Here they go, and as they head out onto the water, someone says, that's where they go. And they run along, and then they come past the village, and what's going on? Oh, okay, we'll join you. And next thing you know, it's like this collection, this crowd just grows and grows and grows. We don't know exactly how it worked in terms of whether the crowd was following and looking and running ahead or whether Jesus deliberately deterred. We don't know exactly. But the point is, they wanted a desolate place by themselves. And on the way, they end up with the exact opposite of that. You can imagine the disciples' reaction, can't you? Oh, you guys again. Oh, the boat ride was nice, at least. Turns out that's all the rest we're going to get, was the boat ride, for however long it was. You ever had a moment like that? Right when you thought you could switch off? Busy, busy, busy time at work, and it's crazy, and it's mental, and you're just pushing through and pushing through, and you finally get things done, and you put your out of office on your email, and you turn that phone off, and you've just got your personal phone left, and you know, you do everything, and you just feel yourself relax. Bing, we need you to come in for something. So-and-so has resigned. We've got an issue with this client. And you suddenly have to, I don't have any energy left. I'm trying to gather what remaining energy, and I realize there's nothing left. And yet look at Jesus. He's not had a time off while his disciples have been out on the mission. He's been managing the craziness on his own. And Jesus, as tired as he is, as wanting of a break as he is, he's not marked by frustration or impatience when he sees these crowds. When he looks to the shore, he doesn't see a fresh load of energy-draining problems. Verse 34, when he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. The first thing that we see, what we're going to really see in this passage, is just Jesus, what he is like as a king, what he is like as a leader. And the first thing that we see in this passage is this, is that Jesus is the king of compassion. He's a king of compassion. Last week we saw a worldly king, didn't we, in Herod. Do you remember the reason for his banquet? It says it was his birthday. Some commentators say it could have been his birthday, it could have been his sort of birthday in the sense of an anniversary celebration of when he took the throne. Either way, it's all about him. It's about me. And the list of people that he invites, you remember who he invites? It's kind of the nobles, the military commanders, the leading men of Galilee. It's all the most important people in the land. Why does a king want to invite and impress and please all the most important people in the land? To secure his own position. To bolster his own rule, to make sure that all the people who could destabilize his reign actually keep him in place. It's a fundamentally selfish thing that he does. It's actually fundamentally something that he does because he doesn't want to be part of the riffraff. I don't want to be part of the crowds. I want to be as far away from the crowd. I want to be a king. And so I'll invite these people because they will keep me king. These people, outside. No, doesn't matter. The actions of Herod in the previous story, they're selfish, they're power hungry, they're status hungry. Worldly leaders, I think we get exceptions to this, but I think for the most part it's about wanting power, keeping power. I think most of the time with worldly leaders, they are concerned with their own needs, the needs of their political party, the needs of those that have put them in that position, who have the power to remove them from that position, lobby groups, whatever it might be. Jesus, for all of his tiredness and for all of the fact that he has just been giving and giving and giving of himself at this point, sees the crowd and he sees just their need. He has compassion. All the energy levels that are just on minus whatever for Jesus, all the desire that he has for a break, and he sees them and he thinks there's nothing else but what they need. How much would we like to have a leader that was like that for the people of the UK? Could you imagine? I mean, leave to the side whether they were able to do anything about it or not. Just that they wanted to. Just for their own needs to matter so little compared to the needs of the people. It's unheard of. But this Jesus, this is the king who did not consider equality with God something to be clung to. For him to even be in this position already, he has shown himself to be the king of compassion. The one who from heaven looked at the lostness of our world and the lostness of people and said, I'm not going to stand by. My needs as the Son of God in heaven, that doesn't matter. People need saving. Notice how Mark describes the people. They are like sheep without a shepherd, leaderless, lost. Previous generations of Israel had had good leaders, Moses, David, Joshua. These guys have Herod. Doesn't really compare. I mean, if you talk to them about Herod, what's he like as a leader? Don't even begin to talk to me about Herod. He doesn't know. He doesn't know what it's like to be us, to be hungry, to be tired, to have to work these hours, to have to do this. It's always cringe, isn't it, when you see politicians today trying to come across as relatable when you know it's never going to happen. You see somebody sort of posing outside a greasy spoon or something, posing with a pub in a with a pint in a local pub. Yes, you know, smiling, photo up. Get in the car, mouthwash, move on to the next campaign, stop. Maybe I'm cynical, but so often you'll see that and it doesn't fit together is the point. You get somebody that comes from another world and they say, I'm one of you, and you're like, no, you're not. But that's what most of our leaders are like. And actually, most of our structures are actually designed to separate and keep certain people at the top. Even those that intend to do the other way around often end up just doing the same thing. And look at Jesus, who knows exactly what it's like to be someone who's really struggling. In Jesus, we have a high priest who is not unable to sympathize with our weakness, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are. In his identification with us, in his awareness of our need, Jesus is the one who knows our pain, who knows our exhaustion, who knows our frustration. He feels it. He isn't distant from it. He has chosen to step into it and experience it. There's nothing quite as frustrating as doing a tough job and feeling like the one who's given you the job has no idea how hard it is there? You ever feel like that about just life? That God has given you a hard job to do and he's miles away from knowing what it looks like to do it. It could be anything. The actual job you do, all the difficulties, with all the stresses, with all the pressures, or just the life situation you have. You might feel about the life situation you have and you might think, it's so hard. And no one knows how hard it is. To be this tired all the time. To be this anxious all the time. This lonely. This weak. This sore. All the time. Nobody knows. Brothers and sisters, our King Jesus knows. He knows our need. He knows our pain. He willingly stepped from a place where he didn't need to feel any of that and said, I want to be with my people in this. And he knows. Whatever you felt frustrated by this week, or exhausted by, or pained by, he knows that. He is this King of compassion. His own needs are forgotten compared to the needs of his people. Notice that the lostness of the crowds here, it comes across in this lack of purpose, lack of meaning, lack of leadership. Notice at this point in the story, there's been no mention of hunger or bread or fish. Lostness, like sheep without a shepherd. How does Jesus address that lostness? He taught them many things. What lost people really need is God's truth. More than anything else, God's truth is what they need. And that is the need that Jesus addresses here. And it's as he's addressing that that this lesser need becomes apparent in verse 35. When it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a desolate place, and the hour is now late. Send them away to go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy something to eat." At that time, people ate their main meal towards late afternoon. So this isn't sort of saying it's getting dark and there's nowhere for them to stay. It's more about they've traveled a long way to this middle of nowhere place. And if they're going to eat today, they need to go and find some food. So it's not super, super urgent, but it is, you know, they need to eat. It's not a desperate need, but it is a need nonetheless. And there is a chance, I think, the disciples here do partly think, we could actually get ourselves a break. They do need to get some food. Kind of works out. They get food, we get some rest. But with the disciples' suggestion here comes an opportunity for Jesus to show something else about himself. He is the King of compassion. But the second thing is, he is the King of commission. The disciples suggest that Jesus send the people away, but he comes back to them and he says, "You give them something to eat. I'm not going to do it. You're going to do it." I mean, make no mistake, as we go through the story, it's very clear that Jesus is the one who provides the miracle, but the way he does it is worth paying attention to. He doesn't just do it himself. "Yep, you're right. Food, there you go. Could have done. Water to wine." We've seen him make provision like that without using anybody else. He asks them. He challenges the disciples to see themselves as those that, having seen the need of the people, are sufficiently equipped to address those needs. And the disciples don't feel that they are. They don't feel that they can do anything about this. The tone of their response to Jesus' challenge is sort of tinged with sarcasm and incredulity. How on earth would we do that? Shall we go and spend 200 denarii worth on bread? If there were shops — there are no shops, but if there were, we don't have that money. What are you suggesting we do? And the disciples are feeling on every level here not up to the task. They don't have the energy for this. They don't have the time to go to a shop. They definitely don't have the money. They can't do it. Jesus says, "You can do it. You can do it." And he gets them to stop thinking about what they don't have and start considering what they do. Verse 38, "How many loaves do you have? Go and see." And when they had found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then he commanded them all to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups by hundreds and fifties. And taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples to set before the people. He could have done it any way he wanted, but he chooses to do it through his followers, through those that are wanting to serve him. He's a king of commission. He takes ordinary, unexceptional people and ordinary, unexceptional things, and he uses those things for something amazing, something nobody could have seen coming. I mean, we don't really know who was responsible for making this little packed lunch as they headed out. Whichever knackered disciple was the one, be like, "Thomas, can you just get some food before we go?" "Yeah, all right." Stumbles over, gets the Tupperware, gets the tote bag, a couple of loaves of bread, a bit of fish. "Okay, that'll do." And they must have assumed that they would stop off somewhere else and get something somewhere else, because this amount of bread, this amount of fish, that's not enough for the disciples even, let alone anybody else. But when he packed that bread in those bags, would he ever have thought that this could have ended up doing what it ends up doing? This is nothing. This is rubbish. And yet Jesus is a king who takes ordinary things, ordinary, weak, limited people, and commissions them for his kingdom use. What little they have — and they're really conscious of what little they have in this story — he can use for astonishing things. And he divided the 2 fish among them all, and they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish. And those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. There's loads of stuff in this passage that we're not diving into this morning. There's a whole political undercurrent here in terms of what the Israelites want to do with Jesus as a leader compared to what Herod is like. And John's account of this story has the people at the end of the passage, at the end of this event, saying, right, you're our guy, you're going to be the king. And he has to really distance himself from a coup being done in his name. So there's political undercurrents. There's also loads of Old Testament nods. The whole idea of the people of Israel in the wilderness being provided for by God himself in really exceptional circumstances where you'd think nothing would ever be possible. You've got that nod, 12 baskets, 12 tribes. There's little themes there. We read Psalm 23 earlier today, and there's a real Psalm 23 flavor to a lot of this. People sitting down on the green grass. Why does Mark tell us about green grass? He's not a gardener or something. But here, green grass. Sheep, lost, needing a shepherd. There are themes, there's loads of themes here, which we're, you know, just there's a few of them. But really what I want us to think about is just Jesus as the king that we've seen. And as we finish, I want us to think about the lessons that come out from Jesus as being these two things, a king of compassion and a king of commission. First of all, if he is the king of compassion, that means he is someone to trust. He is someone to trust. The people in the crowd here, they go from desperation and lostness to complete satisfaction in verse 42. At the beginning, they're needy and lost. At the end, they are content. And although the satisfaction mentioned in verse 42 is referring most immediately to, you know, they'd all eaten and they'd all been satisfied with what they ate. No one needed more. It hints at something a lot greater. It hints at the greater satisfaction that this King Jesus brings for lost people. Their first need that's been raised is that of lostness. And we saw that in their lostness, their need in that lostness was not one primarily of material things, but spiritual things. The way to address a lostness like this is not with a meal. This is something deeper, something greater. Their lostness was met with a message from Jesus, and then the feeding just kind of serves to illustrate that. And we've seen throughout Mark's gospel again and again and again, that the mighty works, the miracles, the healings, they accompany a message. And the message is the thing that people need more than anything else. I mean, just think about it. If it was just about food, a crowd needs food, a crowd gets food. Okay, 24 hours later, then what happened? Stomachs are empty. Then what? This is just a picture of something so much greater. Jesus, here in this passage, in being the king of compassion, he sees our superficial needs, yes. But those superficial needs come in the context of our wider, greater spiritual needs. Jesus knows our grumbling stomachs and our aching limbs, but he sees that in the context of our deepest needs. Our need for forgiveness. Our need to be brought back into relationship with our Creator. Our need for meaning and purpose and hope in the face of death that steps ever closer to us. These are the things that we need more than anything else. And Jesus, the King of Compassion, as he enters onto the scene, he doesn't come to address whatever superficial needs we have, as painful as they might be. He comes and he sees our real need and he says, I am the King to save them. I am the king to address those needs. And so in that picture of satisfaction that comes in verse 42, there's this picture of greater satisfaction, greater contentment. And it ties in with the Psalm 23 kind of flavor that we've had earlier. In verse 41, you've got this little mini foreshadowing of another event in Jesus' life. In Mark 14, we see another occasion where Jesus sits, gives thanks, breaks bread, gives to his disciples. And when he does that, he says, take, This is my body. This is the king who gave his own life for the sake of our greatest needs. This is the king of compassion who, rather than staying distant in the palaces of heaven, came and broke his own body for our salvation, because we needed it. If he has done that for us, if we have everlasting satisfaction ahead of us in the kingdom of heaven, then as we think about the smaller needs that we have day to day, the aches, the pains, the anxieties, the loneliness, then we can look at this king and we can say, I can trust him with that. If I can trust him with that, then I can trust him with this. He knows what it's like. And he knows that my needs go way deeper than whatever I'm feeling right now in this moment. He knows. And I can trust him. If Jesus is this king of compassion, then you can trust him. If he was willing to pay the highest cost to meet your deepest spiritual needs, will you trust him with whatever other needs you're feeling today? Will you? Don't look to other things. Other things in life will say, I can sort the problem out for you. They can't. Even other people might help for a bit, but they can't fully satisfy, fully help, even fully know. This king, our king, he can. So Jesus is the king of compassion. That means he is someone to deeply, fully, with everything, trust. But secondly, Jesus as the king of commission is someone to serve. When we saw Jesus sending the disciples out on mission 2 weeks ago, if you were here 2 weeks ago, we looked at the fact that the disciples haven't at any point suggested that they would be ready for something like this. It's not like they've kind of passed a whole bunch of initiation tests. I was watching the Super Mario Brothers movie the other day. Before Super Mario can go and take on the baddie, he's got to do a whole bunch of, classic video game style tests. Go on, try and do this. Try and do this assault course. Try and do this one. And only when you're ready can you go. With the disciples, Jesus, I go. Go with my message. Go with my gospel. Go with my authority. Imagine if the disciples were so fixated on what they did not have, who they were not yet, that they said, no, I can't. I can't serve. I know you've called me, Jesus, but I think you've got it wrong. Maybe so-and-so, not me. And yet Jesus sends them, and Jesus uses them. And here in this story, where the disciples, they're so concerned with what they don't have, and they're definitely feeling what they don't have. I don't have the energy. I don't know about you, but if you ever see Jesus' compassion, and you think, that's amazing, and I'm so rubbish compared to him. When I look at people and their problems, I do see problems. I don't see people. And I don't want to be like that. And Jesus isn't like that, and I'm supposed to serve him, and how can I? And we think so much about what we do not have. And we're just like the disciples. How am I going to do this? How am I, 200 denarii for all of the crowds? I've just been on this mission for however long. I'm exhausted. You promised us a desolate place. This isn't exactly desolate. What do I not have? I don't have. And Jesus says, well, what do you have? Go and look. As people who are about serving Jesus in day-to-day life, we can sometimes treat Jesus as if he is a horrible person to serve, like he's just intimidating. He's not. Look what he's like to serve. He takes exhausted people with a bunch of scraps in a bag and he uses it to feed 5,000 people and more, 5,000 men and more. I don't know about you, but I think for us, we spend a lot of time letting what we don't have be a reason not to serve. We don't have this. If I did, then I'd serve. I'm not like this. If I was, then. We look at our workplaces and we think, Tim would be great here. I'm not. You might think of a friend who's really good at talking about Jesus, and you say, so, if I was like so-and-so, then I could. If I just hadn't had such an exhausting night last night with my baby waking me up a million times, then. Then I could. And Jesus says to us, says to you, stop thinking about what you don't have. What do you have? You think I can't use that? You think I need you to become something better, someone more experienced? Holy Spirit is doing that. That's going to happen. But right now, in your workplace, what do you have? You have a relationship with God. You can pray for someone. Start there. See where it goes. You have an active faith in God. You can tell someone about that. But I can't speak like so-and-so, and I can't speak... Okay, but who can you speak like? You can speak like yourself, can't you? Guess what? Jesus knows. He didn't call you thinking you were someone different to what you are. Jesus takes bread and fish and makes a banquet. Jesus takes grumpy, exhausted, resentful, really, disciples and makes them his tools. He can use you. Wherever you are this week, whatever resources you feel you have or don't have, look at Jesus and see him as a king of commission, someone who calls people and then uses them. He doesn't call spectators. I'll call so-and-so and so-and-so and I'll use them. I'll call so-and-so and I'll just, they can wait in the back for a bit. Doesn't do that. Jesus is the king of compassion. He knows your struggles. He knows how weak you are. He knows how little you've got in a picnic basket. And he still says to you, you do something and watch what I do with it. There is no better leader. There is no better boss, no better king. We look around the world, we will be constantly looking for someone we can really trust. We might trust certain people to a certain extent. We'll look around and we'll really struggle to find someone to serve. Who would you go and leaflet for? I don't think that I can think of anybody. But in the person of Jesus, in this king, we have a king of compassion, someone to trust with everything. And a king of commission, someone who will use us no matter how weak and rubbish we feel. We commit it to God. We say, this is for you, and then we see what happens. We have someone to serve.